Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out, the most exciting television in Cambridge.
Oh my!
I'm Robert.
In Cambridge, Winters. Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, really.
Yeah, Judy Nathans.
And today is December 4th, 2018.
This city, I mean, the year is coming to a close. It's like, where did it go?
It's racing by, yeah.
Racing by.
You know, it's funny, when I put together various things related to city council meetings and whatever, you know, I put together these calendar events, you know, and then I kind of keep them. So I've got like the calendar, oh yeah, we finished another year. I've got like about 18 years of these calendars that I've been maintaining.
You're really
it's like 1 year rolls to another.
They need to dedicate a room to you at the library. Actually, all your stuff's electronic.
Actually, let's make this a request.
What?
So, you know, I like to write April Fool's versions of the Cambridge Civic Journal.
Yeah.
And this year, this coming year, 2019, April 1st actually falls on a Monday, so it'll be right when it is a city council meeting.
Oh.
You know? And I usually kind of generate my, you know, make-believe
snarky
stuff.
Comments,
But my April Fool's joke, I just sort of make them up sometimes within a few hours, right? So if anybody's got any really good ideas...
Uh-oh.
Send them along,
just,
right?
Just,
you know, let's have a little fun on April 1st, yes.
rwinters.com. Well, actually, r.winters at...
Just Robert at rwinters.com.
That's right, Robert at rwinters.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so,
and there's no dot between the R and the Winters, or is there?
No. So, and my students actually call me R. Winters. That's my name. You know, I'm not Professor Winters, I'm not Robert, I'm
R.
Winters.
Not R.W. or...
You know, I think it's because they have the course websites or something math.rwinters.com, and it just sort of it's sort of like an inside joke, you know.
Okay.
But it works.
All right, good.
So, you know, I am my username. That's it. I have no separate identity anymore.
Yeah. So last week, even though the city council meeting was very short, there were a bundle of committee meetings and community gatherings and Fifth Friday, so we could briefly review that, and then there was a pretty comprehensive meeting.
And by the way, I have proof that at least one person watches this show.
Oh, who is that? Oh, I know
maybe
more
on the
than
internet.
One person.
I know. I listen. I know.
I know who you're talking about.
No, you know. Who
are
you? No, it was actually one of our Cambridge's finest police officers.
Oh.
Who said, "Hey, I really like your story about your Thanksgiving adventure in upstate
New York. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then we got to talking about New York State police officers and whatever.
I think more official type people watch this show because they want to see what you're up to.
Well, it's kind of, it's true. And again, I'm not trying to like put anyone on the spot here, but sometimes I do see references of things that I wrote on Civic Journal or things said on this program.
Yeah.
I, you know, watching a subsequent city council meeting, I hear somebody make a statement, I go, that's an awfully familiar sounding phrase.
Or they'll give you credit. I mean, Jan Devereaux gave you credit in her
report
on government relations.
Government relations, yeah. Well, yeah, and actually, let me just mention that one there. There was, it's a topic we could certainly talk on many times over.
Oh, you can go to that now?
Well, I was just going to say so we did a thing, I put together... kind of a good summary version of how much money municipal candidates raised and spent.
That's what she
Which is not as easy as you might think, because when a candidate loans themselves money and then pays it back during the same year, then it's not like that was an expense and a receipt, you know.
But do you actually see when they paid it back?
Yeah, so if it's done, you know, if it's reasonable to sort of subtract that out to make it look more real.
Yeah.
You know, like if somebody fronted their campaign $50,000 and then only spent $5,000 and
$45,000
back, then come on, it's a $5,000 campaign, right?
Although some people question, where'd they get the $50,000
to begin with?
But anyway, okay, so go ahead.
Anyway, so that's what Jan referenced at this government.
And you get that information, what's it called again?
The Office of Campaign Political Finance is really the source of all the data.
And is that true for both city, state, any elected office?
Yes, though it's done differently. So if you're if you're a municipal campaign, because Cambridge has a population in excess of 100,000, municipal election candidates must do depository accounts. And what that means is, like, during the election year, they get bank reports every twice a month. On the 15th and at the end of the month.
What do you mean they get bank reports?
The banks actually have to issue it to the Office of Campaign Political Finance, and then it's put up on the web.
So it's throughout that election year.
You get very, very frequent reports, which is sort of convenient, but it also means that it plays into one's obsessive compulsive tendencies.
So that means every other year you've got to, because our election's every 2 years.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about campaign finance is that you can have a candidate who looks like they didn't raise and spend a ton of money, mm-hmm. right up through election day.
Yeah.
But the thing is they're still collecting money.
Receipts.
For true. Weeks and months afterwards. Right. And then they're still paying bills. So sometimes right. there are some candidates who famously get a huge amount of money comes in 2 weeks after election day. You know, because it might have looked bad if it came in before election day to get some big checks.
You mean they purposely hold it off?
I think it's sort
of... Or I mean they just don't deposit it right away?
No, I think it's sort of an understanding.
Maybe they return it if they lost. is that possible?
I think people are trying to game the public perception a little bit sometimes. The other thing too, so the way I've kind of settled it is this, I sort of consider the live time for a municipal election campaign to begin in about this month.
Oh my
December
goodness.
2018 wow. through January of 2020 will be
20. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so I give it about a 14-month
oh,
span.
Oh, that sounds so long.
Well, the I thing know. Is there right. are some candidates who are just starting yeah. out. Like Quentin okay. Zondervan started out doing yeah. some multiple $1,000 fundraising yeah. in, maybe it was even starting in November of
wow.
2016 for the 2017 wow. election. Well, if you're a new candidate, you sort of
I
want
know,
to get
have
a
to get
early
out.
Money, right?
So can we talk about this whole thing? Because that was a committee report on how you finance campaigns.
Yeah.
But I like what, yeah. Let's do that a little later, maybe.
Oh, whatever.
Well, no, I think it's interesting because it's not going to go away because it's an election
year. Yeah, I tell you, let's just touch on a little bit right now.
Okay, and then we'll do that review of the whatever.
Yeah, so there was as part of the city council agenda for yesterday, there was a committee report from the...
November 14th, because that
government
was televised,
operations.
Which you still can all
yep,
see.
It's
on video.
It, right?
It's a very good meeting.
Yep, and it was the topics were... Councilor Toomey had proposed something called a...
The Cambridge Municipal People's Pledge.
But there had also been proposals by others in previous years for...
Right.
Putting
some, kind of finance,
some sort of
right.
publicly
starting
financed
in 2014, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when we first saw the first hints
right.
about this.
Okay.
Now the truth is this there's no way that this is just done independently. You know, I think it was a pretty much a common knowledge that the Citizens Committee, the grassroots organization that was doing this, happened to have Nadeem Mazin's
Oh, you're talking about
address.
That initial, the
yeah.
independent something.
So that was
yeah.
basically
okay.
one of Mazin's mm-hmm. little groupoids of people, of activists mm-hmm. who were pushing campaign finance. Now, this is not to say it's a bad
it's
idea
not,
or a good idea,
right.
just to say that it was very much wrapped up into somebody's own political
and it
future.
Probably has occurred in the past, even before Mazin
well,
became
I mean,
a councillor, right?
Well,
I mean, you've been around,
it's not a
right?
new idea.
Right.
I mean, the thing is that people talk
yeah.
about publicly financed
yeah.
elections all over the place.
Right.
And
many
it's been
cities
implemented
are doing
in
it in different ways. And this is
in
what...
In different ways, yeah.
And
So some people want to actually do it here in Cambridge, right?
Yeah.
It comes up
every year.
It went before government operations maybe mm-hmm. 4 years ago, and then mm-hmm. it came again, whatever. And I got a chance to talk at each of those meetings, but mm-hmm. This most recent meeting I was scheduled when I was teaching, so I couldn't do it.
But Jan Devereaux did an excellent graph, you know, what
yep.
we call it, PDF,
gave
of the whole
of all.
History of it,
yep.
and what other... models are, so that was a really good start.
Right. I mean, there's a real discussion, I think, that can
yeah.
be had there. But, you know, one of the things that was missing, I think, in this round is what I would have contributed had I
yeah.
been there, is the specifics of proportional representation elections. Okay, so the thing is that it's one thing if you're talking about, you know, two candidates trying to go head-to-head or four candidates trying to win a seat
mm-hmm.
or, you know, something like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
like people fighting out who's going to be mayor of a
right.
a city where there's a popularly elected mayor, right? So that's one context. It's a very different thing when you're talking about an at-large election to elect nine people where you have 26 candidates, right? The dynamics are sort of different. There are candidate slates, which are not the way it's going to be
mm-hmm.
in most elections. So I put a few speculative
oh,
notions
right. you,
out there.
That was your thing about raising, if you gave money, then all those people in that slate
yeah.
would get money.
I mean,
and then to
yeah,
get
how
some
does this
money.
Work? I mean, the thing is
yeah.
that if you were an organization who sort of were running as an organization where you had a few standard bearers who you wanted to elect as part of your slate, what you might be able to then do, especially if the candidates have no skin in the game because they're not mm-hmm. raising, they're not using their own money, what they do is, and a lot of it depends on how much money they would get, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
but you could get a group of people to contribute whatever the minimum required amount would be
mm-hmm.
to, you know, let me just make up a number and say 20 candidates.
Yeah.
And, get them all to be your slate candidates. They would all then be eligible for money. Mm. You take all that money, and then you basically use
really
it to
buy
promote
a lot
the
of
slate.
It. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So the thing is that so you have slates end up becoming this dominant force here, as opposed to individual candidates.
An aggregate of money.
Now, this is just speculation. I'm just saying that's the type but it's one of those considerations that I think people have to have if you want to talk about doing this in a Cambridge context. Right? You know, and I mean, one thing, there were some years when there were effectively no slates, but in the last few years, you know, so what are you going to have? You're going to have a bigger Cambridge or a better Cambridge.
Kind
it's
of a
bigger,
bigger
Cambridge,
it
right?
Is bigger.
But the thing is, so if ABC says, okay, now they're an independent thing, they raise money,
right.
You know, they're in a 501c4, so they're going to have, if they stick around, I don't know if they are going to stick around, but they raise a pile of money, you know, so they're going to get a bunch of slate candidates, and then they're going to get some public money on top of that, and then they're going to basically, you know, what's it going to be, Clash of the Titans here?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, okay, so that's one, right.
Right. But and the other thing, too, is that PR elections work just fine if you've got maybe 15 to 28 candidates for 9 seats. It's not so many candidates as to become overwhelming. Mm. But, you know, honestly, even when we had, was it 26 candidates last time around?
Yeah. Well, you had three open seats.
Right. And open seats, in the end, there were actually two candidates who were elected, never even reached the election quota because the votes were spread around among so many candidates.
So there's so many chances you can get elected. So there's other factors when you have a PR election. So,
yeah. And all of the examples that people quote are from places that are not in any way similar to the way Cambridge's elections are structured.
Like Seattle.
Yeah, they
New York.
Well, first off, none of them have proportional representation.
Okay, and New York and LA, right. Because the small donor, there's different models. Well, full funding means, and I don't like that one, like let's give $15,000 to each candidate.
Right.
And then the small donor, you raise a certain amount, then you can get a matching donation. It's 6-1 in New York City, it's 4-1 LA, so I guess they have that kind of thing. And then also, and vouchers, I think, is what Seattle does. But they're very small. It's like $75. But they spent $1.7 million in Seattle. But here it would be equivalent to $250,000 that we would have to spend. So I don't know if the taxpayer... I mean, then there's talk about having this on a ballot.
Well, I agree. That was part of the committee report. I think Jan Dever was mentioning that
Which would bring it out to the community, but...
Because
counselors shouldn't be deciding this. I think she brought that up, too.
Because that's really true.
It's affecting you.
Yeah.
You can't have, it's like the fox, whatever that analogy is.
Right, but there is a kind of a funny thing about the municipal elections. If you put a ballot question on that's very politicized, it ends up becoming part of the election campaign for the candidates. You know, do you support this? Don't you support
that? Well, if
they
take a stand on it. But maybe they won't take a stand on it because in some ways, if they support, give me $15,000, that might turn off people.
Well, and it could sort of affect
the elections. I think it probably has to be separate from the municipal campaign.
I'm the cynic in me basically said, but there's not a whole lot of ways to do that.
Well, they've done questions out, like they did a survey of Cambridge citizens. Can't you do something like that?
You can do things like that.
It wouldn't be binding, but maybe just, hey, well, how do you feel about this?
But, you know,
and try to reach people.
Well, one of the things that I learned and taught when I taught a statistics course at Wellesley College was that when you're doing surveys and samples and studies, so much is biased into the way you phrase a question.
Oh, absolutely.
So, for example, if you say, do you support publicly financed elections? People go, I think that's a great idea.
Uh-huh.
Well, do you support it being mandatory that your tax money should be doing
that?
They go, well,
I'm not so sure.
That.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Or Obamacare versus affordable.
Yeah, and they say, well, as Leland Chung pointed out, how do you feel about a candidate who's been convicted of a felony eligible to receive public funds? Just because by virtue of the fact that they're a candidate, and then the person responding goes, "Well, maybe I'm not so sure now."
Yeah. Well, that's very general, but you're right. I mean, I guess Mayor McGovern brought that up last night in one of the last comments about it was. How do you determine what qualification? Is it a higher threshold that's needed? Well, that's actually was said in her report too. But
I think the bottom line too, and I think Sumbul Siddiqui said this. It was part of the report. I think Mayor McGovern pointed this out as well, which is that though once upon a time, perhaps having a deep pockets and the ability to send out gigantic tricolored, glossy citywide mailings would affect your electability.
Yeah.
But that's becoming less and less relevant today.
With certain pop, if you're under 40, right.
Yeah, I mean, there's one candidate who actually raised and spent the most money in the last municipal election was not elected.
Right. And he had a lot of literature. Yeah, everyone had a lot of literature. Right. But
actually, there were other candidates who did fabulously well who didn't spend a whole lot of money at all. So,
I mean, it favors incumbents, that's for sure. The election, I mean
most elections do favor incumbents, right? You know, so I certainly wouldn't blame somebody who's really trying to break in because it's really important to them.
Well, what about term limits then? That's all these things have been thrown out, like the questions around how we elect people. So you could have term limits, which means newer blood coming. How do you feel about that?
I like newer blood, but the thing is, that's not the same as favoring term limits. I mean, there's a sort of encouraging people to get other jobs. Yeah. Or maybe having the salary not be so lucrative that they are absolutely dependent on the city council job. But the thing is that, you know, when you there is some value in having the kind of institutional memory of having some candidates who've been in the office for a good long time.
I appreciate, like, Tim Toomey's historical.
I mean, I said, as much as Ken Reeves and I have had our differences over the years, I thought it was a real shame that when he left the council, because the thing is he had a very rich set of memories about what didn't work and what things were tried and why they failed.
Yeah.
You know, and as city staff becomes newer, there's more turnover in that as well. You sort of lose something, and I like having a city council which is a mix of people who've been there a good long time.
True. Right. And you're right. So term limits would not.
So it's turnover.
So basically people have to just, they elect who they want to elect.
Yeah, so I just hope that the circumstances are such that there's going to be turnover.
What do you think about the, one of the other ideas is district reps?
I hate the idea.
Yeah, because I think we have PR, which almost gets to that.
The thing about, people who are, I think people are a little mistaken when they think about having district representation.
That's what they have in New York, right? Boston. They have a
combination there.
Right?
I think it's four at-large city councils, and then they have districts.
Right.
You know, and some people think that's great because you are the district council. You are the go-to person in the district. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, in Cambridge, even with at-large elections, you as a candidate can run various specific geographically centered campaigns.
Which is basically what they do. And I think PR actually allows that.
Traditionally, it was these distinctions are sort of becoming historic relics now, but it used to be the Cambridge Civic Association or CCA versus the Independents, capital I Independents.
And is that kind of east-west?
Well, it wasn't exactly, but the Independents tended to run more geographically based campaigns. So Tim Toomey, geographically based out of East Cambridge. Okay. Before him, it was Al Vellucci, geographical out of there. Tom Danahy was out of North Cambridge. Danny Clinton out of Cambridgeport.
Right.
And Walter Sullivan was more of a citywide candidate, but still his base was still in Riverside, Kerry Corner area.
Right.
Billy Walsh was probably one of the great changes to that pattern because he was an issue-based independent.
Oh, he was the anti-rent control.
Because he was so solidly anti-rent control. So
wasn't Rafferty also on the council? Was there
Jimmy Rafferty was served on the Cambridge School Committee.
Oh, the school committee.
Yeah.
Did he run for council?
I don't believe he did. I don't believe so. I could be wrong. So the thing is that you have had district councilors because voters can choose their own
district. It's a small enough city that you do identify with neighborhoods.
Right, so our system basically
it's sort of
by design,
it
allows you to run as a district councilor as well as an issue-based councilor or based on your identity, be it ethnic, religious, racial, whatever. Right. So, and if to whatever degree you can get 10% of the voters to identify with you geographically, racially, religiously, or whatever, then you got yourself
a
seat.
Not a whole lot of votes when you think about it. Like quotas, usually around 1,600 or something.
Well, that was during the low years.
This year it was
2,200 or something like that. It was a big jump.
So when you think about what elections are won by and stuff. It's
Well, it'll be interesting to see whether people continue to vote in the municipal election last year like they did.
Yeah, it may not. Next year, since there's not any open. Well, we don't know. Maybe open seats.
We'll see.
People don't usually have to declare till what, July?
Nobody has to declare until
you have to then
fail to file papers.
That's what I'm saying. That's July.
Yeah.
Is that June, July?
Right, so it's actually in the month of July.
Okay.
You get to take out nominating papers July 1st and turn them in July 31st.
Okay.
Or, you know, depending on when, what's a weekend
sure.
or
so
not.
Sure, so you get a month to get your papers in. Okay.
So I think it was at Alice Turkell when she was choosing not to run for school committee the last time.
Yeah.
I was having a little fun, like, where's Alice?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And she was just sort of being a little evasive.
Yeah.
But she actually wasn't going to be running again, but she didn't want to put the announcement out too early.
Huh.
You know, and that's happened before. There were other times when somebody didn't let it known that they weren't going to seek re-election because they knew who they wanted to follow them.
Oh, so they didn't want to get anybody else.
So there was kind of an understanding with the other person so that you didn't get a flood of new candidates trying to jump in and get that seat.
Well, it's just game in the system, I guess. Yeah.
It's game in the system, absolutely. Huh. Yeah.
All right, you know. So I guess that's... All right, so I guess we covered that. But that's again, watch a video, the committee... that must have been like a 500-page agenda packet, right?
It was huge, yeah. Yeah. I didn't even bother pick it up this time until Monday night, and I just picked up one just to have it, and I'm going to discard most of it anyway.
Well, don't discard the committee reports. Those are my favorites.
No, I hold on. Yeah, no, actually, sometimes they're great. Yeah. Actually, my favorite things are the reports from the Historical Commission when they're talking about landmarking something or doing some sort of historical study. Those are real keepers.
Yeah.
You know, one other interesting item that was on the agenda, it was really from the city manager's agenda.
Mm. There were 18 items on that one.
Yeah, yeah. But it had to do with it now starting to initiate the process of the refranchising of the cable TV franchise.
Oh, right. Yes.
And that, you know, in the early days, actually, you probably know more about this than
I do.
In the early days.
Yeah.
What was the first company that landed the contract?
American Cable Systems. Mm-hmm.
Right. So the thing is, when they were first doing it, they had the responsibility to basically build out the network. They had to run wires and do all that stuff, right?
This was after the municipal referendum, because a lot of us wanted to own our own system.
Right.
And we lost by 100 votes or 37, something, out of 25,000. So
Anyway. It was a close call.
Yeah.
But the thing is as American Cable Systems built out the system, you know, they were required to do certain things. Like if you can't just build up part of the city, you had to build up the whole city.
You had to provide.
Yeah, you can't just get the rich folks to get the cable and the poor folks not, right?
Yeah.
And you had to provide government public access.
And educational access,
right? Which you still have to do. But there was some room for negotiation under the laws at the time, or regulations at the time, so that...
And everybody wanted cable TV because they
wanted
the
cable
reception
TV.
And everything. And
but your local...
There was no internet, by the way. People think, oh, we had a municipal broadband. No, we didn't. It was just cable
television.
Yeah, so
we're talking like mid-80s here.
Oh, yeah, mid-80s.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I never even saw a browser until about 1993 myself.
Yeah, so, I know, because people confuse that. Oh, we tried once and everyone wanted it. No, it was different. Because now we're saying broadband, forget the cable TV.
Yeah. Now, I remember in the first... So, I think it's every 10 years you have to re-up the franchise, right?
So, it's coming up in 2021.
Right. Now, in the early days, you know, you could actually make as part of the negotiation specific things about pricing, about selection of channels. I think, well, you could argue. I don't know how much you could argue
pricing. I don't know that for sure.
Right. But the thing is that, for example, if you wanted to say, well, what's the... Could you do a la carte programming? Could you, as a person wanting to have cable TV, can they just pick up a few channels that they want?
I know what the difference was. I think there were more applicants then. You didn't have just a monopoly. You had I think there were other people competing for it. I don't know who the other.
Right.
So they had to sort of sweeten the pot.
Yeah. Okay. But with each refranchising.
Right. It became, there was no competition.
You went from the point where you could actually argue whether should the sci-fi channel be part of the basic.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's not even allowed to be discussed.
You don't discuss anything.
And that's thanks to the United States Congress.
Oh,
When they did some re-upping of some Telecommunications Act, whatever.
I see. So you know more about that
than I do. Heavily influenced by the lobbyists.
Right. Yeah.
So what happened was is now municipalities have almost zero leverage.
Or the actual packages.
All they can really do when you get to refranchising is basically do a little bit of minor negotiation about government programming, you know, government related, like we have a municipal channel.
Yeah.
Public access. And educational.
But it's tied to the television portion of the Comcast.
That's another matter, yes.
Which is the problem because those subscribers are dropping.
Right.
I don't think it's tied to the internet.
The revenue source, the revenue stream was entirely based on cable TV at the time, and that's not changed. So even as when internet, now a lot of people watch the TV program via internet.
Yeah.
You know,
although some people do have the triple play, so they get the landline, they get the TV, and they get internet.
But it's only the cable TV portion that actually funds things like public
access. So basically, things have to be looked at, because that's not going to...
And the city has been trying to work out, and they're still in process.
Right.
Lisa Peterson made reference to this at the meeting. You know, so CCTV, which is public access, it actually does some programming.
Right,
now
and they have had relationships with them. There is, the money is shared there that they do get, which I didn't know. I didn't know that the money's given also to 22 CityView from that cable.
But now the thing is, if in the future these there's a little bit of a merging of these two, then there becomes an issue. Like, you know, I mean, goodness, if I say something that's less than flattering here on a, as part of a public access television station, but we're somehow now merged with City, and some elected official says, well, I don't like what somebody's saying.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
And no, it wouldn't. Yeah. It wouldn't. But the thing is that these are the issues that you do have to consider.
Yeah, so basically, she said, Lisa Peterson said, how can they merge city and government functions? And we can't commit to $1 million for CCTV right now, which is what they get from.
So the future will be a little bit different.
And so that money then, the appropriation was for a consultant, I imagine, to help them guide through this RFP.
That's right. Okay. So anyway, we'll see how it all shakes out. But
it's
going to
be interesting.
And you know, the thing is that I keep looking on the horizon to see if there's some sort of new promising technology that might permit a different way of delivering.
Well, I think this is why the Upgrade Cambridge people who are advocating for municipal broadband
create the pipeline, basically.
Right, but then, what you brought up is that things are changing, so the city, even though they've said no to it, you know, things change every second. So
I don't usually, I don't universally love consultants for everything, but this is one thing where consultants would be pretty good.
And it's not $1 million.
Right,
We'll see you in the next segment.
So we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.